16 away from 5. It's time for Message in the Bottle. Eric Mann of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor, right here in studio with us. Lovely weather we're having, huh?
It's fantastic. It's the perfect weather for, say, a nice bottle of wine and some cheese and soups.
Yeah, and soups and a hug and, well, maybe, maybe
do you need,
even...
Do you need a hug? That was subtext.
I did.
Soup, maybe a hug.
Didn't think
you'd give me
that.
A hug when you came in, Eric. I'm just saying. I didn't notice or nothing, but no hug.
Could just slip it in. You wouldn't notice, but you'd feel compelled to do it.
Well, is the scruff on your face from November, or is it just that you're lazy?
Yes.
Because that looks like some rough, like, your wife cannot be liking that. That is, nuts. That's rough grit sandpaper.
It is
right
at that,
that's
that,
impressive.
Yeah, it's at that abrasive stage right now, as I've been for most of my life.
That's right. What did my friend post the other day? And of course, I understand, obviously, that November is a cause and is a point, but my buddy, who's the bassist in my band, who keeps a proper beard, right, put something about, like, November, oh, you mean National Amateur Beard Month, you know? It's like,
yes,
you know,
yes.
It's like, you know, there's those of us who just, we threw in the towel a long time ago. I hate shaving.
And I saw some pictures from early in your relationship.
Oh, gosh.
I will say the beard
That's
is a great choice.
That's why I did the beard. That's right. When one is born without a chin, one does. I didn't know I was going to have a father-in-law who was a plastic surgeon of some renown. So I went with the beard. It worked beautifully.
I like it.
The funniest part, so obviously folks know I used to be a classical singer, and I was in grad school at Rutgers, and I was supposed to sing a part of great gravitas, a Roman guard coming in to arrest the emperor and blah, blah, blah. And the night of the thing, I shaved my beard, and all of a sudden I looked like a 12-year-old coming in to arrest the emperor. My director just goes like, Mr. Meehan, let this be a lesson. You don't shave unless you tell somebody you're going to shave, and then they get a chance to say no. Because, yeah, I lose... thank God I have the baritone voice. Otherwise, I'd have absolutely no weight whatsoever. Oh, my gosh. I can't even complain about Eli this week. He actually did okay. Not as well as the guy they signed off the street. So we might as well just talk about wine.
All right.
Jeez.
We can do that.
I guess. I mean, it's like the segment, right? Message in the bottle, by the way. We finally figured out where it is.
Right there.
I'm telling you. We're in South America. I wish I could tell you that we're in sort of a warm area, but in fact, this sort of weather is a very appropriate sort of climate for where we're going. At least cold wise and chilly wise, and making you want to wear multiple levels of sweaters. So we're talking Chile, not Chile, Chile. Why is this one of the most fascinating wine regions in the world? Well, because like California, and kind of like, you know how we talked about California, like there's just this incredible breadth of coastline and lots of regions. Yeah, well, Chile has the longest coastline in the world of any country, and an awful lot of it is devoted to agriculture and viticulture. Although it's been a very recent phenomenon built on sort of the shoulders of ancient traditions. We'll talk a little bit about it. But if you look at where, you know, if you look at any sort of map of Chile's wine regions, you will really only see what they call the Central Valley. That's sort of this heartland, essentially right across the Andes Mountains from Mendoza, Argentina, that we were talking about last week. But the vineyard plantings literally do go all the way up to the far northern part of the country, getting closer to the equator. They go up so high in elevation that they're the highest plantings in the world in terms of just trying to sort of defy Mother Nature and grow grapes. Don't we like our booze? Gosh, we're going to go to unbelievable, literally, heights in this case to get to it. But the heart of Chilean winemaking is, like I said, the Central Valley, and we'll talk a little bit about that. First of all, why is it really fantastic? Well, our old friend the phylloxera louse is not there. It's just not. So these immigrants who came over, predominantly Spanish, a lot of missionaries and types like that, much like the West Coast of America, North America, I should say. They brought, their local varietals. They came over and they basically were just making, you know, plonk for general consumption for years and years and years. But that said, they were making an awful lot of it to the point where Chile was a huge, huge importer of basically table wine, especially into the Americas, of all the South American countries that we've kind of gotten to know. The first one we really got to know, although we probably didn't realize it at the time because they were making labels basically for Americans, was Chilean wine. The big sort of geeky thing that you can find there is the grape país. País is in various clonal variations, that sort of mission grape that they brought over with the Jesuits primarily and all the other Hispanic settlers. And you can still find a lot of plantings of it. So if you kind of want to go old school and taste what it was like, it's a fairly rustic grape. Is it as nasty as some of the stuff that they found here in America that we consider, quote, foxy, which is a nice way of saying that it stinks? it's a little more elegant than that, but it's tannic. It's a grape that is hardy. It's a survivor, and so that's why it was obviously brought over. But it's also, you find an awful lot of Bordelaise varietals and other French varietals. And in the case of the wine we're talking about today, this is a French varietal Carignan that we love, made by a French Basque immigrant who married a Chilean woman. So even today, there's a lot of this mixing of that sort of Eastern Mediterranean culture with this region over there. It's very, very interesting. Extraordinary fertile soil, beautiful Mediterranean-type climate. The only real issue is that it's all desert, which is why there's no phylloxera louse there. So it's really incredible. There are irrigation canals dug by the Incas up to today, modern irrigation canals. The first ones were an extraordinary way of turning a desert into a viable land. And essentially, it's just been improved upon, but it hasn't been changed. That's what they needed. That's what they've done. So they'll take the runoff from the Andean snows and create aqueducts and waterways from it. It's really quite extraordinary. The other thing that really has changed in the viticulture scene in Chile, I said it was basically, you know, mass produced, you know, table wine. It was also not really thought of in terms of microclimates, which is silly because it's got an extraordinary amount of microclimates. But originally it was basically like inland or coastal. But let me explain a little bit about that. So there's, obviously you have the Pacific Ocean, and you have something called the Humboldt Current. If anybody's ever had the cheese Humboldt fog, or, you know, the Humboldt County out in California, that the Humboldt Current comes up from the ices down south and sweeps up and cools beautifully. And then you have the coast, and then you have sort of a foothill mountain range. Then you have this fabulous Central Valley, and then you have the Andes Mountains, which are, I don't have to tell anybody who's ever seen pictures of them. I mean, they're literal skyscrapers. I mean, they're dramatic, they're huge, and obviously they present a tremendous weather pattern influencer. So you have the Humboldt Current cooling, you have desert-like conditions, you have cooling conditions coming down from the Andes, which, combined with the warm air in the Central Valley, creates a lot of fog, and it creates a very sort of nice climate for grapes, and it's absolutely wonderful. But the difference is, because of the tremendous change in latitude, you're talking about different grapes that want to grow there. So great, you've got really good conditions for pretty much everything, but what do you want to grow there? So you're finding a lot of really different, interesting varietals, again, mostly French. Syrah is really thriving in some of the reaches where you have a little more sunlight. You get beautiful up in the northern ends. You're getting some beautiful Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noirs that are absolutely exquisite. And then you're getting down into the Mall Valley, which is in the more southerly reaches of the Central Valley, which is where we find today's wine. This is, again, as I said, Carignan from Viña Matilla. It's really excellent, owned by, as I said, a guy who was from the Basque region of France, married a Chilean woman, and their first vintage of this, the Weyon, which means kind of mate or buddy, is mostly Carignan with a little Pais. It is what we call a field blend. Basically, he's got a bunch of grapes, And that was kind of the deal, as I will remind people. People would very often kind of plant a bunch of different varietals and see what ripened. That was before there was a lot of, you know, scientific advancement. And so you'll find these places where you'll find grapes mixed in, and they're perfectly cool with it. They make it, and they call it a Carignan, but there's a little bit of that native grape Pais in there too. Not native, but historic, rustic, whatever you want to call it. But it's really, really cool. It can be drunk with a slight chill, and I think it's absolutely fabulous now that we're coming up on Thanksgiving. This is a wine with a little bit of tang, a little bit of rusticity, not too heavy. Invites you back for another sip. It's really perfect for your Thanksgiving table. I know I'm running short on time, so I didn't want to mention, speaking of Thanksgiving and everything coming up, we've got our tasting this Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Bangor Wine and Cheese. We will be doing, naturally, wine's perfect for putting up with your relatives and sipping with various roasted fowl, hams, and side dishes. And just we'll talk about pairing next week, just as a lead up to that. I always do my sort of thanks pairing special, so tune in for anybody who's always wanted to know how to pair wines, especially with
in-laws.
With in-laws, that's correct. with internal strife. we are certainly looking for it. Not the strife part, but my in-laws have slowly been getting more and more confirmations that they were not expecting. So there's definitely there's been the request of, just make sure you bring the wine. Okay.
Yeah.
You got it, Marge. We're on it. We're always there for you. Cool. I also wanted to mention, what did I want to mention? I lost track.
I covered the tasting Thursday.
Covered the tasting.
Talked briefly about your Giants.
Talked briefly about my Giants. I've lost it all.
Store
hours.
For Thanksgiving week? No?
No, that's pretty much all staying the same.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm sure it was really interesting. If I come up with it, I'll mention it next week. But in the meantime, Chile, discover it. Cheers.
Thanks, Eric. Eric May and Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor.